Ars Electronica 2008. A new cultural economy.
So those are some of the, I think, emblematic and embodiments of some of the issues that were driving the digital music's, Ars Electronica. So I want to open up the platform and create a kind of a forum amongst the artists here, Terry, Hans, and the Reactable crew, by asking first to the audience, and then if we have a shy audience, I have a couple of questions I'm dying to have you guys answer as well. But anyone in the audience have any comments, questions? Wow, you guys are shy. Okay. Very polite Austria. Wow, okay. Well, I have a question that I would love to see you guys all answer, and that is the social process. On one hand, with Hans, you have this notion of using the hardware to, I think, interrogate some of the issues that can drive the idea of the glitch, some of the idea of the mistake, you know, because a lot of the windows opening and closing and stuff like that made tones. There's a kind of irreverence for you make the operating system as an interface itself. And then with Reactable, you guys were kind of looking at how to create a social process and how that would become the composition in its own right. And then with Terry, the idea of the core sample and using the landscape as itself to respond to people's movement through the landscape, and that way they wear the headphones and be able to hear the different frequencies. I thought it was a really good kind of continuity between the different projects. They're all radically different. But what role does the social process play in your work, if any?
Well, most of my work is actually designed to be listened to in a kind of solitary context with the headphones. And that's not really maybe immediately perceived as a kind of social experience or a networked experience, but I'm more interested, I think, in the process of making the work to interact with sight as a, as I said, as a place can be thought of as a person or a person can be thought of as a place. That research process involves witnessing or observing the kind of social processes that unfold in a particular place and give it a kind of condition that, in my mind, is a landscape condition. I think of landscape as a social term. It's the shared physical reality that is the way we shape an environment and a kind of mediated space that we share inevitably as embodied beings in embodied landscape.
For me, it's mostly about finding the edges of reality or errors in reality, which makes it visible or experienceable, and that's kind of a social drive, I think. I have never thought about it in that way. You just made me think about it like that. But when I do something, I want to make something visible, which is already always there, but you don't think about it like the selling argument for computers, and this is an industry-driven thing, so you can kind of get it on the hook. And I try to keep a smiling face with that. Sometimes I fail. And on the other hand, like a piece like the Benchmark Concert is a piece which is even has a lower entry level as the React table. It's also more predictable, so it's less flexible. But anybody can put it on his computer, and I've performed it like in Berlin, and people asked me to have the program, and then they did it in Belgrade and set up a performance of it just running, because you just put it on your computer, hit the space bar, and then you watch. But it was a group of engineers, so they wanted to know how fast their computers were in musical terms.
Well, I mean, for me, if you're talking about engineers, I think our approach is like from sort of the other side. You know, I mean, we're working like for I don't know how many years in trying to really manage all this computer music stuff somehow. And I mean, what you do, you show like just using mistakes, we can almost do as well as by really deterministically trying to come up with something musically interesting. And our approach is really the other way around. We are stuck. Then that's why I think of me a little bit of an engineer too, because my background is engineering and music too. But mainly engineering, so that's my approach to the whole thing. So actually, sort of you're like the one who sort of destroys the work that we want to do, no? but still, I think, I mean, it's very interesting, and I think it's very funny, and actually it also shows a little bit where we are, and shows a little bit that we're not there yet. We haven't seen everything, although the computers are fast enough and everything, but yeah, there's still a lot to be done.
Yeah, I think here, I mean, our approach is quite, I'm afraid to say, quite traditionalist. I think socially what we really want to, what we think is that, I mean, there's a lot, obviously, of interactive installations, active listening. We wanted to see that as a continuum. I mean, as a continuum from listening, active listening, and virtuoso performing. It's always seen, I mean, it's usually seen as very separated things. And so we wanted to construct this continuum between all that, so that something that you arrive, you play, you have fun. And what happens if you keep having fun for years? You become, you could become a virtuoso. So that was a bit our social view of that, I think.
One of the other things that really struck me about the common denominator with all of the pieces is that essentially you guys are using found objects, whether they be computers or operating systems, and then really deconstructing them and, you know, repurposing is the economic term. You know, it's like a new kind of architecture where you're taking a found form and then really changing it. With the Reactable, I really felt it was kind of a 21st century jazz. If you look at, you know, some of my favorite jazz composers, Ornette Coleman or even people like Charlie Parker, they had to establish a vocabulary and really, you know, what made them have that vocabulary become part of the beauty of the history of jazz was that they were amazing at improvisation. Same thing with Duke Ellington and a lot of the classic jazz. It was responding to the city and the kind of the way that Harlem or certain geographic regions really concentrated certain skill set. You know, if you were playing bebop or free jazz, there was a very specific geographic region. But with your work, I was really reminded a lot about with Terry's work of the Black Mountain College. In fact, John Cage wrote this one piece called In a Landscape. In 1949, where he literally just was on the side of a mountain and stared out and wanted to try and translate the mountain's landscape into sound. And with Hans's work, you have to remember there's a lot of layering going on here. Improvisation, using standardized materials, breaking those materials, that kind of irreverence towards the found object of the computer that says, look, I'm not going to just play, but I'm going to play with the entire structure of what the computer represents, because it's essentially a standardized object, it's a consumer level object, and it's something that's now becoming more and more ubiquitous. So as artists reach further under the hood, so to speak, of and being able to change the materials, you're going to see that this is a universal instrument. So it's an instrument that can actually be many, many, many other instruments, which is kind of a meta, you know, kind of the metadata, so to speak, of early 21st century composition. Now, the other question I wanted to ask is, did any of you formally study music? Okay. But in a German tradition, looking at some of the Stockhausen tradition, maybe any like Kurt Weill, the Grausch Musik, you know, this kind of, there's a whole tradition in Germany of repurposing materials, right? I mean,
it may sound funny, but I'm I started as a pianist and composer, and so I have all this in my mind, and it's why at a certain point I wanted to look at it differently. So, but I also, that's why, for example, made this electro viola piece. I try to keep references, even if they are not so obvious, or like in the case of electro viola, my teacher didn't even like it. He didn't find it beautiful, so what the fuck, I still do it.
So are the pieces ever finished?
Sorry?
Are your pieces ever finished?
Some of them are. I still do music for instruments or so. And I hope, as I'm evolving, or as hoping to evolve, the pieces will evolve too. So I work with material and I hope to find new things. And it's an ongoing series like these physical aspects of computers. I still do new pieces with that.
And what's so amazing is that what all of you, I think, critique is this notion of linear processes. Most songs, you know, if you think about a song, it sticks in your memory. It has a beginning, middle, end. Maybe someone singing something that's a familiar tune. There was one of my other favorite composers, Raymond Scott. He did this. His music was used for the score for Bugs Bunny, for example. And millions of people know his music as one of the early electronic music composers. He also did this series called Music for Babies, which was played in kind of 1950s hospitals. But very few people actually know his name. So the idea of beginning, middle, end of a song or composition, I think all of you have kind of, this is just my own kind of DJ motif here, but all of you have said the song is now repurposed. It's completely transformable. It's something that doesn't necessarily have a beginning or an end. It can continuously be changed, tweaked. And that's kind of what I think digital media in the technology scene, if none of you really studied music, you're applying this idea of the engineering process to what would be kind of an algorithmic process. So the song becomes kind of an algorithm, almost. Or at least, to me, that's my take on comparing you all and why we're thinking about music in Ars Electronica, is that it's algorithmic composition. I mean, but it's still improvisational, and it still has a very specific skill set. So what I'd love to do is provoke the audience a little bit. Is anyone out there a composer? Is anyone mad about the end of the song? Maybe? No? Okay.
It's not relevant. It's just reactive. Björk and other all performers have used the React table. I'm just wondering if any other composers, if you're giving it to composers, I see it as a very theatrical thing, and I'm just interested if you're handing it out to other people to compose with.
Well, we are in contact with composers and performers. They are not using it live yet. In fact, they don't even have one yet. So right now, there's only Damien who plays with Björk and ourselves who play with it. But we are talking with both. Also, I mean, from the beginning, it was he was talking about improvisation. For us, it was really a performing instrument and not a compositional tool. But it's strange, or maybe, I mean, many composers have asked if they could have one. And so, in fact, we are also working in a version that could be more, not necessarily real, I mean, that you have to do everything, there, but that you can get ideas and all that. But yes, we are talking with quite a few musicians that we like, because, I mean, that's what we think that has to be done. The problem is that right now there are not so many in the world, and that we cannot give them like that. But I mean, we are starting to build them, and we are talking with musicians, definitely.
I'd like to say there's one interesting aspect, because he said like it's very theatrical and things, but which I see like a little bit a critique about the React table, and it's also like its popularity, which could have been, I mean, and that's really an interesting point of the whole thing. But the concept wasn't like this. I mean, it's one thing that's really interesting, I think, about the React table is like all this visual aspect that it has isn't like made because it's a visual aspect. Maybe it didn't come out in our presentation. It's because that's the information that we think that we would like want to have in order to advance in our musical processes and things that probably, I don't know, maybe are missing in.
Yeah,
no,
we didn't make it
things
to look cool.
That's what it wants to say.
That was a very serious statement. All what you see in the React table is there because it has a meaning, and it's a very serious meaning for the people that are performing. It's a way to know everything that's happening. It's like flying, I mean, well, I don't fly, but imagine flying a jet with all the lights turned off. I think, I mean, the engine works the same, but I think it's quite hard to do it. So all what you see there is really relevant, but we know that it has been one of the reasons for its success, that it looks so shiny and so so toy-like, but it wasn't really meant.
Hello. Well, I'd like to add, for example, I'm not really a musician. I failed twice at learning the piano. I have been learning now the React table for 3 years, actually basically performing it. And But for me, as one of the instrument designers, is really the most exciting part of it is seeing other musicians picking it up, taking the thing away. And for example, now with Damien Taylor playing with it for the last 1.5 years, it was really exciting how he developed the instrument for himself.
Also, to me, it's, amusingly enough, it didn't necessarily seem European. It looked very Japanese or something like, because I, you know, DJing in Japan a lot, it seemed like something very current, like Tokyo, Shibuya, you know, the kind of video game parlors. If you go to Japan, you can see they have whole buildings that are video games, and the interfaces are really strange. People can dance with an image, they'll play some drumsticks or something, but they've been playing a lot more with interface. If you look at Nintendo, it's been around as, I think, over 200, maybe 150 years of game development. But, you know, I love the fact that it feels like a game as well, you know. And your piece could easily be a geographic game of play hide-and-seek almost, you know. There's a kind of a fun quality to it as well. So I'm trying to make sure to connect some dots here.
I was just going to say I also failed at piano for 9 years. But I think what I really enjoyed and took away from it that was a deep impression was the kind of kinesthetic relationship and this a kind of knowledge of ratios in the body. And somehow when that gets kind of writ at the large scale in my work, it still is an influence. It still somehow even influenced me in sculpture and painting. So, but it was a big moment for me to discover that I could maybe almost escape the computer screen and move back into real space in a compositional process that could bring all of these things together.
I just wanted to say about form, still make a bracket, that for me form is very important, and even it's not like song and chorus and stuff. Most of my forms are kind of like terminal, or I wouldn't know how to say it. Like the computer piece which I showed at the beginning, it's lethal for the computer. So I start with a working computer which boots up, and at the end it's dead. This is what I consider a kind of form, or when a computer doesn't give any sound anymore because the operating system is so overloaded that it's almost shutting down. That's the kind of formal processes I'm interested in. Of course, it's not easy to contain in like traditional forms, but it's also form is an evolving process.
You know, one of the things I found very lyrical and fun about your piece, Hans, is that the computers are almost overdriven, literally. I mean, they're melting, or he likes to kind of break them, or, you know, and then some of the software can be put into a context where, say, for example, William Gibson's new book, or most recent book called Spook Country, the main characters are moving through this information landscape, and the actually a lot of, like, cyberpunk, you know, whether it's Bruce Sterling or William Gibson, they used to set their novels in the future, and now everyone's writing in the present, which is kind of the current science fiction of our, you know, information economy. So, what I'd love to see if there's anyone else out in the audience, so I'm going to keep pinging you guys. Anyone? No? Wow. Okay. Oh, here we go.
In architecture, the digital architecture, there's these new kind of forms of structure, and I'm wondering if there's a new definable structure in this kind of music.
Terry has a very architectural response, I think, in her work.
I've been lucky to hang out with a lot of architects and appreciate what they do as far beyond anything I could ever conceive. But I guess I'm not quite sure on what you're referring to, maybe algorithmic or parametric design. I think that probably relates more to the works that function as instruments. In this case, it's a more algorithmic kind of reference.
I link that with your question before about improvisation and about music. The reactable, we see it as an instrument, so you could give the structure you want. I was playing and studying saxophone 20-something years ago, and I was playing jazz, and I really liked free jazz, so I was a really bad saxophone player because I didn't like to practice scales and to study and try all this, and practice. And when I discovered computers, I had really the idea, it was like something. I'm going to become a computer music improviser. That was 25 years ago. And And it's very complicated because, I still like to play with acoustic musicians. And one thing that is very complicated with computers is that, if you play the guitar or a saxophone, you just arrive there and you don't have to talk to anyone to discuss what's going to happen. Whereas if you play computers, you are thinking, what do I have to load? What are the presets I'm going to play tonight? And then you kind of have to make many thoughts in advance, which if you are a guitar player, you just bring everything with you. So one of my ambitions was to make a computer that you can just go there, it's plug and play. You go there, you don't know at this exact second what's going to happen because you don't want to know it. Because you want to have the maximum, which is obvious. I mean, you cannot have everything. But you want to have the maximum choices in order to do whatever you want there. So everything, sound and structure, is, I mean, for us, the great thing is that it's there for you to pick it up and decide it whenever you want. But obviously, you can also take the other choice, and which we are quite bad at it. And it's figure out and plan everything from the beginning to the end, and then arrive with something very, very scheduled. And we are not really... that's not our...
Well, you know, as an architectural motif, there's one of my favorite architects is Bernard Schumi, and he has this series of books called Event Cities. But there's also Italo Calvino, the Italian writer who wrote this book called Invisible Cities, and there's a really interesting French writer named Alain Rolgrier who did this piece called Topology of an Invisible City, which I think actually there is an architectural motif to all of this. It's because we're looking at pattern recognition. And patterns are what literally connect all of the different artists here right now. So if you look at like Detroit electronic music, if you look at what comes out of the kind of Motown or even like Stax Records, the old Memphis stuff, or compare that to Edgar Varèse, who was a composer who was doing stuff for buildings, or Yanis Xenakis, in the 20th century, artists and composers still had this idea of the common pool of instruments, you know, the violin, the cello, whatever. For I think what Reactable's talking about and what Terry and Hans are also talking about is that the computer is a meta instrument. So the buildings literally are looking at structures made of people's intuitive response to software, which is a very Bernard Schumi kind of motif. If you haven't heard of his work, he's a really interesting architect. There was another question here.
Hi. It's my first time at Ars Electronica, and I was attending all the days, and I think there is something I would love to discuss regarding the way in which the prizes are, the different projects are placed in different sections, you know, because there is something that when you call them interactive art is something like a piece of art, you know, shown, and we are discussing something very interesting, which is technology to produce and ideas of sharing music or physical computing with, you know, a musical attitude. But we're not talking about digital music in itself. I mean, we're not talking about the results of the music. There were some, I know very well, Reactable presented it in Italy last year, but the meaning of the digital music now seems like more focused on the technology behind that and not on, you know, trying to describe, you know, new scenarios of what's going on in terms of contents. So I was thinking if, you know, there is an idea of how going through this, because I think computer music is something a bit old in terms of, you know, everybody's working with the computer, everybody's working with technology, with producing, and everybody knows that computer is an instrument exactly as they did. A lot of people are working on new interfaces to play, you know, and shown before a couple of very interesting new instruments that everybody can find. And even the DJs are starting using Cowspad since 10 years now. So the focus is on the contents of music is so not interesting for people working in this kind of events like this, or is for the music is a strange time in which maybe contents is less interesting than just building new technologies. Maybe it's a question for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, for me as an artist, I was a judge, so I'm these guys are the prize, so I'm kind of going to focus on them a little bit. But I tend to think right now we're at a point where we have access to so many different musical inputs, and you have to really think of it as a Deleuzian notion of machinic process. And I'm a huge fan of Deleuze and Guattari's idea of this notion of comparing repetition and what they call the machinic phylum, which means you have different ratios, proportions, and patterns. And the human, we're pattern recognition creatures. We really like patterns. Now, content versus context. Technology is really changing, and it's changing very quickly. I actually think some of the best and most interesting stuff is coming out of the cell phone scene, actually. Stuff going on in Korea. There's a really interesting group called the Yellow Arrow Project, for example, where they're doing a lot of GPS stuff, which is also why I was attracted to what Terry was up to. But as a DJ and writer and artist, my work is probably very different than theirs, because I'm really intrigued with playing with found materials. But if if someone writes programs like MaxMSP, they can really change the interface constantly, no matter what. So, you know, there's a sculptural motif to that. There's a sense of, Duchamp's notion of the found object. There's a long tradition of that. But the problem is that people still have these old boundaries. All right, art ends here. Music starts here. A text is over here, or architecture's over there. But software blurs all of those kind of categories way past the 20th century's very narrow. I personally think we could easily be talking about these artists as installation, or it could be sculptural. It could be in a normal gallery context. Or, for that matter, we all don't even need to be in the same room. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys could all be using tables, and you could be in Japan, you could be in Finland, you could be, you know. Yeah. So geography, you know, becomes irrelevant as well. And this is, again, there's lots of layers of why I think as an artist and as a judge, I wanted to respond to the work of the different artists that we chose for the prize. It's a very rapidly evolving field, and you're probably going to be seeing a lot more. You say, for example, one of my favorite architects, Greg Lynn, is doing all this kind of biomorphic, what he called blobjects, that are very eerily biological, and you'll probably be seeing, there's artists who've been doing music out of DNA, and there's people who've been doing stuff out of even wind and air currents or magnetic field, like Charles Dodge in the 60s. So the list goes on, and I'm just very happy to see that we have people being playful and irreverent about the idea of the computer is not just a little sacred object that you should just use and preserve, but tear it up, break it down, try some different things. How are we for time? Oh, we have to, okay. So once again, I want to say thank you all for coming out. What's your website?
Well, for 2 weeks ago, we can say it's very short. We have reacttable.com.
It's Hans, how is that thing called? -w-koch.net.
It's terryreeb.net, and it's in the catalog on the margin.
So if you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to check out all of these artists' wonderful websites. They have materials, and always, always, always please support independent artists. It's really important that we think about looking at art not as a finished product but as a continuing process, and it's a real pleasure to be here at Ars Electronica 2008. Thank you for coming out. My name's DJ Spooky. Thanks.